Hello, everyone, on a beautiful January 22nd, 2023. This is the 212th episode of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast. On the podcast today, we have me, Lucas DeRuyter, a man who took a friend's dog on a hike today and got to enjoy all the best parts of owning a dog with none of the downsides. No money investment, no training element. This dog is already trained and great. So yeah, I just had like 4 hours of walking around with strangers being like, oh, what a lovely dog you have. That he's such adorable. He is so well trained. You've done a great job training him. And I was just like, by the fourth person, I stopped correcting people.
Yeah, I was going to say,
thank you.
You want to go on a date with me? You know, you'll probably see plenty of this dog. This is my dog, after all. The dog that lives at my place, which is nice.
This goes poison. Place.
This idea had occurred. There's got to be like a rental service, right? A business model where you can rent dogs for like a day or a couple of hours for this exact experience for nefarious purposes, like trying to hit on women.
It might be a thing. It's very possible that this is a business that exists. I will say that there is no chance that it didn't at least at one point exist, but may have gone horribly wrong, because giving people a live animal and then expecting it back after a certain amount of time probably doesn't always go well.
That's fair. That is very fair.
You can see a lot of dog kidnappings, a lot of future serial killer shit.
Oh.
A lot of, yeah, this is my best friend. I'm going to feed him this chocolate bar to show him how much I like him. I've never had a dog before. Shit like that. I took the dog out on a leash. What do you mean? It needs a leash. Now it's in another state.
Well, we have their credit card information, so we can account for some of that. But no,
who owns the dog though? The company, or like, is this
Verve for dogs? Verbo, not Verve. That's a different thing.
Verve is a streaming platform. Yeah.
Does Verve still exist?
I think so.
Yeah, I think. Sure. I hear radio commercials for them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely still around.
But anyway, yeah, this is just. Yeah, like
if it's that, then money isn't gonna replace the dog.
If this is a business where they own the stock, if they just have a ton of dogs that can be rented out at any given point, I feel like there's probably some other ethics issues going on there.
What if it's done in partnership with like local kennels or shelters? No,
okay. None of those kennels or shelters are designed to hold dogs for very long.
Yeah.
Like they all, there's a reason that most kennels have a euthanasia program is because there's just too many dogs. So yeah, I don't know what the long-term impact of that would be. And then like, who gives a shit if the dog gets kidnapped? Cause it's probably better than the dog living in this kennel, like
where it's either going to be very bad for them in the short term or very bad for them in the short term, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's the only term they get.
Okay, yeah. So definitely has to be some kind of waiver where a person will legally say that they are not and do not plan on becoming a serial killer. Okay.
You serial killed my dog specifically asked you not to?
No, you're going to use that in the court of law when 5 years from now you're on trial for 7 murders and you're like, Your Honor, Exhibit A will show that I really promised to not be a serial killer back in 2023.
Right.
So your case is flawed.
I promise the explicit opposite of this. Now I will bring in my first grade teacher.
Yeah.
And she will attest to the fact that I do not lie and I'm an honest person. If these two things are true, I think you must acquit.
Also on the podcast today, we have a man who's about to rank the top 3 serial killers of all time. Ryan Holtz.
Ooh, I was hoping it was me.
Yeah.
Damn. There's some heavy hitters in this one.
Okay, well, for first.
What's top three? Are we talking like top three?
Like coolest serial killers?
Yeah, like most badass
or top killers? Three, like
top three in terms of how horrific they are. Yeah. Is best like they're chill or is best like they did it for good reasons or is best like nah?
So when I'm thinking of like what makes someone the best serial killer, headcount one, definitely a factor.
Ooh.
But also, how much have they influenced the popular idea of what it means to be a serial killer?
Right. Yeah. How much have they influenced the game? How many of these true crime podcasts?
How many copycats do they have?
Yeah, copycats have got to be taken into account 100%.
Yeah. Mm. Also, you know, style points definitely count.
Right. No, style points are 100% real.
Yeah, because like there are people that have just astronomical kill counts that are like, yeah, I've killed 60 women that I called a prostitute and I shot them in the hotel room and left. Right. And I did that for 30 years.
Like, experts estimate that there are dozens of serial killers that exclusively prey on homeless people right now. And like just no one ever finds them because it's impossible to do so.
Yeah.
There's no evidence. There is no link to anyone. Like it's game over. So yeah, those are boring. Those don't count.
Yes.
And I think I'll exclude Bundy because of that. Because yeah, he was kind of boring when you look at like the grand scheme of things. He just kind of went around and killed people. All right. I feel like I'm not necessarily gonna rank them 1 to 3, but I gotta at least name 3.
Right.
Zodiac Killer's gotta be on there, right?
Yeah,
Zodiac
Killer's
gotta be on top. Never found the guy? Come on now.
Like,
No, that's true. Ted Cruz. Cruz's dad.
No, I mean the whole thing like 2 years ago where they like are
the Golden Gate Killer. Yeah, that's the other guy. No, they never found the Zodiac Killer to this day. They have some strong like leads that are probably just cold forever and will never be found.
There is a guy that they are like reasonably certain is the Zodiac Killer now, who died like not that long ago. And like there was this whole thing that came out after that where the police are like, we're pretty sure this guy's a Zodiac Killer, but like we could never prove it. And there's like a bunch of relatives that are like, yeah, he told us he was the Zodiac Killer. And like there's a bunch of shit that fits and I don't know.
Yeah. So Zodiac Killer's got to be on there. You talk about media manipulation, you talk about like all the classic like leaving your, you know, your stamp on the crime scene and everything like that. Like Zodiac Killer came in and changed the game. Zodiac Killer was the Babe Ruth of serial killers, I feel like, where it was just like, nah, man, this is a whole new thing now that he's been in and out. Speaking of changing the game, I feel like Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper's got to go on there. One of the OGs.
Like, if we're talking OG, like, this is... That's fucking Abner Doubleday. That's the originator. That's James Naismith right there. Like,
this is a guy that captivated like all of England for a long time.
It's still to this day. Like everyone knows Jack the Ripper and knows a Jack the Ripper reference. Like it's gotta be. So we got Jack the Ripper. We got the Zodiac Killer. And I feel like I'm fighting real hard against the Wisconsin bias. So that's why I'm going to give into it. And yeah, I feel like it's gotta be Dahmer, you know, like he's a modern Marvel. That's the LeBron of serial killers. That's the, like, yeah, sure. You know, like he's not spectacular in any particular area, but like what a well-rounded serial killer, you know, like he really had it all. Every aspect of serial killing. He's a 9 out of 10.
He was gross. He was scary. Yeah. He was never caught. He, you know,
he died in a Portage prison, Portage, Wisconsin.
Murdered by a fellow inmate, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like half an hour from my hometown. So I think it's a solid top three. And I feel like it's similar to like the Wilt Chamberlain versus Michael Jordan versus LeBron argument. Like, I don't know that we can really rank them. We're talking cross era here. This is
right.
These are all different. I think we got your Wilt, your Jack the Ripper, where it's like, yeah, this dude was killing up against plumbers and electricians. Like, I don't think that shouldn't necessarily be easy to compare to a guy who's, he was up against the greats with like Dahmer and even to a lesser extent the Zodiac Killer. So I think that's the top three, and I'm, you know, actually, that's up to our audience to rank them.
Huh. Now that I am looking through Wikipedia's list of serial killers in the United States, not a lot of them making a go of it in the modern internet era.
Most serial killers have transitioned to mass killings.
That's
a very common like phenomenon that's been studied, and a lot of it's related to like media coverage and all sorts of stuff, is that serial killers, like we said, they're kind of copycat because they see a serial killer on the news and they're like, oh, that's how I get famous, that's how I leave my mark on this world. Now you're not seeing it on the news anymore, you're seeing the mass spree stuff, and so that's now what a lot of those people have probably siphoned down to.
As gross as all of the like weird serial killer and like true crime podcasts and documentaries and movies and TV shows are, do you think we'll ever at some point get like a similar obsession with like mass shooters?
Some people have, I know.
Yeah.
The Boston bomber who lived had a weird little fan club for a while there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. I think the Columbine shooters had a weird following for, I don't know. I think that, yeah, we've been there,
mm-hmm.
but I think hopefully we've moved past most of that. As I say, with like a mass shooting literally last night in our area, Lucas,
yeah,
killed 10 people. So yeah, I don't know, but serial killers, I feel like, ignite the imagination a little more, you know, I feel like it's so macabre and so like horror movie-esque that it's a little bit more palatable and kind of like an escapism type thing. Whereas, yeah, like a spree killing is just more like, oh, yeah,
this is just a horrific thing.
Right. This is a person acting on humanity's like worst impulses, basically. Like if you gave a lot of people an assault rifle and at the peak of their road rage on the road, things probably wouldn't go over well. Like it is just a person giving into like base impulses. I don't think many people have a base impulse to carry out, yeah, like methodical,
yeah,
killings over the course of years. Like that's not an urge most of us have, because no, it's not really a in the moment urge. It's very much a planned kind of, you know, long-term thing.
Myself sometimes.
Yeah.
Myself, I have the impulse to be like, I could throw myself over the side of this trail I was hiking on today and just end it all, but I got the new Fire Emblem waiting for me at home, so I'm not going to do that.
Oh yeah, no. We all have Call of the Void.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
Rank your top three calls of the void you've experienced.
Hey, who's the one introducing people with dumbass prompts here? It's me. And the last but not least, I'm introducing Andrew Clark. What do you think of the way the NFL playoffs are shaking out? Because they're a little weird.
They are a little weird. The 49ers-Cowboys game is going on as we speak. I haven't checked a score update since we started the podcast. I mean, like, that first round of playoffs, like, you know, there was some crazy shit that went down. And that was fun to watch. It was good football. Other than that, though, the teams that are left are kind of, like, at least as of today, were the ones people expected. The biggest upset is probably that the Bills aren't going to the at least the AFC championship. But yeah, again, they were beat by the Bengals, a team that is very good and was at the AFC championship last year. Like, no one is like flabbergasted that the Bengals beat the Bills. Everyone kind of expected the Chiefs to get to where they are right now. The Jags were a fun story, but like, and they, you know, held on against the Chiefs, but the Chiefs are the Chiefs. In the NFC, you have the Eagles, who have been the best team all season. And then you got the 49ers and the Cowboys, who were the second and third best teams in the NFC this season. And they're playing right now, and it's kind of neck and neck. Like, both have good defenses and have good to good, very good offenses. So I mean, it's like the way we got here is weird, but the results are still like pretty much as expected.
What was going on with Mahomes in yesterday's game?
He hurt his ankle really bad.
Oh. Yeah.
And he was kind of like playing football while hobbling around like someone who like stepped on a shard of glass.
Didn't he hop for a handoff one time?
He did. Before they did briefly pull him out of the game, and it was like he hopped on one leg to hand the ball off on like a wide handoff to the running back. And then on like the next play, he tried to like throw over the middle and just kind of like collapsed while throwing, and the ball went in the dirt because he couldn't put any weight on his leg. And they like took him out. He got real mad. He got big mad. And then after halftime, he came back out and was still just kind of better than almost all NFL quarterbacks while still being visibly hobbled. It's weird.
And you forgot the part where Chad Henne led a 86-yard touchdown drive.
No, it was like it was like 97 or something. Like they started that ball like backed up
the whole length of the field.
He was in the end zone on the first play. Or in his own end zone on the first play. Like, yeah, no, that was a very good drive. And then they're like, left. We still, yeah. They're like, we're still going to put Patrick out there.
Yeah, no Nick Foles situation there. It looks like the Cowboys just tied it up 9-9.
Ooh, yeah. Anyone's game.
And the Bills got spanked on their home turf after the whole controversy with the, like, seating because of the canceled game and everything.
A little bit of a bummer. New York teams didn't make it further after having such a strong year across the board.
Why is that a bummer? Fuck New York. Like, they're they're the biggest city in America. They're the biggest market in sports. Like, they have it too good by default.
I think he was counting the Bills, though, who definitely are not the biggest city in the U.S.
New York State, Buffalo, upstate New York.
It's the second smallest market, right? Huh. I think the Bills are the second smallest behind the Packers.
I know they're in the state of New York, but they are not one of the New York football teams. They might as well be a Midwest team. They're up against the goddamn Great Lakes.
Again, that was weird. I'm sorry. Am I still connected?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Huh. Well, that's going to be annoying. Cool. So a lot happening in the NFL. Not a lot happening in news that I thought to write down, except for the fact that a lot of layoffs are happening, including at the company I work for, which really sucks. Although I think the layoffs that happened at Fandom are far less interesting. Feel free to call me a shill than some of the ones happening at other companies, which... Yeah, layoffs at Microsoft, Amazon, other big tech digital media giants really seem to be influenced by, I don't know, the pandemic ending earlier than people maybe anticipated, or digital booms that a lot of people were counting on because of the pandemic not lasting as long or getting as big as what they thought they would. And then... yeah, a lot of people had kind of hired, a lot of companies had kind of hired banking on that. And then when they didn't pan out immediately with the recession that's been looming for longer than it hasn't at this point. Like, I feel like people have been talking about economic collapse for a while. Yeah, that results in, I mean, more people being laid off than what could possibly be rehired in their given industries.
I'm just glad we get to finally stop the nobody wants to work anymore.
Yeah.
Stuff. Oh, that's fair.
Finally. Like, it feels like it's literally been a decade of people being like, no one wants to work. There's so many job help wanted signs. Like, what is going on? Oh, it's all the stimulus that we passed over a year ago, and it was like $1,200. Like, that's what did it.
That
makes me happy at least.
Like, also unemployment being at like an all-time low, and it's like, we have all these job openings but no one to fill them. That must mean that there's nobody that wants to work. Like, dude, there's no one that is fucking available to work. There's so few unemployed people at this point. And like, people are not really like quitting their job and then going and finding a new one. They're leaving their job for one that's already lined up because it's a better opportunity. I mean, and now people are getting laid off. So, yay, you got what you wanted, the Fed.
Yeah.
One thing that I kind of remembered over the course of all of this is how successfully Microsoft has distanced themselves from the Windows product. Like, when I hear Microsoft, my mind immediately goes to Xbox and not the operating system powering, what, like, more than half of all computers, right?
You're also in a very particular frame of mind.
That's fair. I'm a dork. I'll admit that.
Well, that's not what I meant. I mean, your job has to do with video games and television.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I kind of forgot that Microsoft is almost inconceivably large company, a company so big that they can lay off 10,000 people the size of like most small towns in middle America, and they're able to successfully run the company still. Maybe.
Yeah.
220,000 people. So yeah,
that's how many less, people less work for Microsoft. 5%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember seeing like a bunch of Elon stans being like, oh, Microsoft lays off 10,000 people and the media doesn't bat an eye, but Elon lays off like 2,000 people and everyone freaks out. And like, well, first off, every media outlet covered Microsoft laying off people. And second off, Elon cut over half of the company. Microsoft cut, it's almost like inhuman, like the scales that we're talking about. Like, right, when you talk about 10,000 people being a drop in the bucket, because those are people, but it is a drop in the bucket for them. Elon crippled the company because he wanted to change everything. Microsoft made a percentage-wise regular business move.
Elon crippled the company and then went to testify in court. Yeah, no, my public reputation is that, like, I'm kind of a wild card. People shouldn't take what I say seriously, Your Honor.
Yeah. If it pleased the court.
I'm a fucking lunatic.
It was for the memes. Have you ever heard of memeing and shitposting?
No, Your Honor, don't understand.
Do you get it?
I'm a liar. Everyone knows I'm a liar. I can't be held responsible for the lies that I say because you should know that I'm lying. It's your fault for believing them.
What do you mean you don't understand why the number 420 is hilarious? Is English not your first language? Like, what's going on here?
Are you a pedo guy?
dumb shit. But then, yeah, I got one maybe kind of tangential nerdy consequence of that. Well, there are a couple of those, but also Halo might not be a thing anymore. A lot of the layoffs were at Studio 343, the company that makes Halo now.
Yeah, but they weren't even the original. Like, they'll find just another group of like game developers to make Halo for them. And Halo will be on its third developer. Third developer isn't really that much of a big deal compared to second developer.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just think it's weird with like where Halo used to live in the cultural zeitgeist of it being like, yeah, this is just an IP that's like passed around between studios anymore. It's not really this authored thing.
This IP is for the streets.
Yeah. Sometimes we'll just give it to Spielberg, to Paramount Plus, and then John Halo's fucking. And like, that's a part of the canon now. That's a part of the brand.
Never
mind. No, you go.
I was going to change the topics. You should go.
I was just going to say, is there a comparable IP on like Sony's end to like how important Halo is to Microsoft and Xbox? I know they have other like first party exclusives, but like, does Sony have anything that's as tied to who they are as a like console developer?
There's nothing that big. I feel like Sony has what, like 5 or 6 properties that might add up to be about the same impact as Halo, but there's definitely nothing near Like, people will 100% buy a console just for Halo. Like,
yeah. Well, what about PlayStation All-Stars?
Yeah.
Did
you forget? God of War 2018, the best game ever made?
I mean, I could reach and I could maybe be like Final Fantasy, but like the first six of the... No? Okay.
Not the
All
same,
right.
Dude.
Okay,
no
I get
fucking
it. Talking
way.
Some FPS bros in here.
Those are the big games. Those are the most popular games. We're not talking about in terms of quality or how important they are to you, Lucas, individually, or like even like a group of people. We're not saying that their fans are more fervent than the fans of Halo or anything like that. More people buy Halo than Final Fantasy or Fire Emblem. Like, that's just how it is.
Actually, I'd love to see those numbers over time, like lifetime sales.
Well,
because Final Fantasy
has 30 ass games,
and the best ones might surprise you. We can pivot shortly, but I don't know. Microsoft is in a weird position right now as a company that a very small part of it in the grand scheme of Microsoft makes video games because, yeah, boy, it really seems like they've spent the last 2 years buying companies that make video games and then not releasing video games. And now the Microsoft video game Halo might be in the weirdest, most insignificant place it's ever been. So that doesn't seem great.
Right.
All right. What was your pivot, Ryan?
Well, first I wanted to see Final Fantasy VII in 1997 sold 24 million copies. What is the best-selling Halo game? I feel like we can do this. We can do this. Damn. Andrew, get ready.
Yeah, no.
I think you're in trouble. Looks like Halo 3 had about 12 million copies, so
about half. I also found that the Final Fantasy franchise as a whole has about 173 million copies sold over the course of its games, and Halo has 81 million copies.
Right, but you were talking about like, oh, it's because they have so many releases, which they do.
Right.
But the number one, Final Fantasy VII, has about double the amount of Halo 3, so there you go.
Boy, I wonder how many people about 10 years older than us, Final Fantasy VII is the only JRPG they played.
No idea. I've never met anyone who's played Final Fantasy other than you in my entire life.
I've never met anyone else that's admitted it.
Wow.
Right, that's totally the reason, potentially, is that no one else has just brought that up ever.
I don't mean admitted it like you should be ashamed of it. I mean has made it a thing that I am aware of.
Like when I say that I play video games, they're like, oh yeah, me too, what are some of your favorites, and I list mine, and then I go, what about you? And never heard anyone say Final Fantasy in there.
Well, I'm a big freak for Doki Doki Literature Club.
What's it? The yacht, what is it? Something simulator? I don't know.
Yandere
simulator. Yeah. Oh god, that's a complicated fandom.
Is it? It sounds pretty straightforward.
No, there's a lot of internal drama. That game has been in beta with a pretty like hostile to the fan base developer for about a decade now.
But in terms of the moral, or just the morality of the fan base, it seems relatively straightforward. Is that just me? That doesn't seem complicated. That doesn't seem like there's a lot of gray. It seems pretty easily.
We talked about the kinds of people that may or may not get into serial killers and mass shooters.
Yeah.
And I feel like there might be a pretty big swath of them that play Yandere Simulator.
Yeah, no, my pivot, it came up in the moment, but it was that I watched the second episode of Andor, which is where they have this sex scene, the first ever sex scene in Star Wars. And I think you oversold it, Andrew. That was the tamest sex scene that has ever.
I think that's what I said. I said it was classic Hollywood.
You said classic Hollywood. They like kiss for 5 seconds, walk to the bed, cut to the morning.
Like, yeah, that's classic Hollywood.
I don't know, man.
That's, I'm not saying modern Hollywood. I'm saying classic Hollywood.
That's straight up borderline G-rated. Like,
sorry, the way everyone was talking about this, in my mind, I had assumed that a human penis entered into the most alien practical effects genitals that have ever been constructed.
That one's on you.
Yeah, no, I know that Andrew did sell it as like, I thought he meant like classical, like what you would see in a movie in the 90s, not like the Hayes Code where you couldn't show a flushing toilet.
No, like, when I said classic Hollywood, I mean classical.
You meant like Hollywood. Yeah, you can't mention the fact that we have
it'll get scrubbed. The morality department will come in and do something about it. Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're telling me no one has hooked up with a Twi'lek while sucking on their weird hair tentacles in Andor?
I don't know if Twi'leks are in Andor. They're not yet, at least.
Huh? I don't.
Are there like any aliens, or are they all?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, there's full blown aliens. Usually
there's
for
some
comedic
fucking
effect.
Aliens up in here.
Usually they're played for comedy so far. I'm curious if any of them are ever played straight. I think we've met like 4 named aliens, and every single one of them, it was like the joke that they're
they're
fucked
different.
Up and like not we and we can't understand them. Like, that's the bit.
There are very few aliens in Andor as a series, I will say. Like, almost every single person you see on screen is just a human being.
So there's no like, I'm Scrimblo Shabadoo and I'm the voice of Marxism in this story.
No, the voice of Marxism is played by the guy who plays James in The End of the Fucking World.
Oh, nice.
Okay, pretty solid casting.
That's a good one. No, we just met an alien who's like the assistant to the fucking spaceship lender, and all he's doing is just like going like, and then he's talking back to him because he can understand him, but we don't get subtitles, and it's like, ha ha ha, classic comedy. Like, I don't know.
Well, I don't know about that. I have some friends who are human, so I'm not gonna laugh at that joke. Is there any like explanation for why, like, are a bunch of people in Star Wars just bilingual, or is there some kind of technology that's like, and now you can understand this race of aliens language?
I think it's like just that a lot of people speak multiple languages because of how integrated the galaxy, the world is, because I think there are points where like, yeah, they'll speak with an alien and know what they're saying. And then they'll run into a different alien and be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, Star Trek has like that, like the universal communicator or whatever. But yeah, I don't think that Star Wars has a similar version.
I would suck in the Star Wars universe then.
Yeah.
I've tried twice with 2 very different languages. My brain is just not wired.
Oh, you've given up on Japanese? Is that what I'm hearing?
I can still pick up phrases. I still know terms. A trip to Japan might be in the cards for me in next year, early next year. So it's kind of like, how far can I get? But
hop on that Duolingo train, baby.
Yeah,
I'm never going to be fluent.
I mean, you don't have to be fluent. Like, I mean, you don't have to be anything, but like, there's value in knowing part of a language without being fluent, you know.
The problem is that you enjoy anime, so you have to get to the point where you can comprehend enough and you're off to the races. Like, you're done. You will become fluent through watching organic Japanese anime.
They say the best way to like learn a language is like, once you know some of it, you just like watch media. Like, you consume yourself, or like you surround yourself with media in that language, and it just, like, you like absorb it naturally that way.
There is a reason that like a lot of people speak English with a semi-American accent around the world, and it's because we're so dominant at exporting culture in the form of TV and movies. Like, a lot of people grew up learning English from American TV and movies. So
I met someone on the hike today who has an accent that only she has. From Brazil, lives in LA now, but learned English primarily through a foreign exchange student program in Tennessee. So just imagine Brazilian affected Portuguese mixed with southern accented English and southernisms.
Yeah. My girlfriend Angel had a pretty distinct accent that I don't think is super common, because she was, you know, born and raised in Indonesia for a long time and then moved to the United States right around like when she became a teenager, and specifically like the Valley. So you can hear like Valley Girl, high rising mm-hmm. terminals, kind of like classic, but also, yeah, like, you know, distinctive English as a second language accent as well, like mixed in there. And it's very unique. Like, yeah, it's fun and stuff like that happens. It's language. Very organic and good.
Humanity.
For culture.
Yeah.
Wait, so does she go like, I'm hotter than a barbecue on a hot sun and bullshit, you know, like a weird, what are those? Those aren't similes. Are those aphorisms? What are those?
I think I've just called them southernisms.
Just southernisms.
No.
He got out of there faster than a lickety split on a barbecue sandwich. You know,
like that's no,
shit
it
like
has,
that. What are those?
Yeah. Fuck. I remember we learned about this when we read Bridge to Terabithia. Oh, God damn.
God damn. Faster than a one-legged man in a butt-kicking competition. I don't even know what that means.
She did have one or two of those.
What are they called, though?
Most notable thing was, like, a general, like, aversion to swearing from someone our age. Yeah, which I think might be Southern American English, more puritanical culture influenced. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Like I said, not a lot of news happening, so we're kind of moving right into the breakouts. Someone else talked about this, so this is technically a group chat, but whatever. I watched That 90s Show, and all of these fucking kids look like they know what an iPhone is.
It's a problem.
I also watched the pilot of the show. I don't really know if I agree with that. Just, I don't know. Like, it's the 90s, like, culture and clothing and all that shit is like kind of cyclical. So there's a lot of shit that was popular in the late 80s and early 90s that's kind of back today. I just think the show is pretty mediocre.
also true, the pilot especially. I gave it up to 3 episodes, and I am firmly dropping it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed a lot like That 70s Show. Like, you know, they kind of recaptured that same feeling. The humor is exactly the same, and that's fun. That 70s Show isn't, like, fantastic television. It's just a thing that was on, and sometimes you watched it and laughed, so... Yeah, I don't think it's for me.
I don't know who it's for. I don't know who it's for.
It's for people that like That 70s Show. People that probably grew up in the 90s and then watched That 70s Show when they were teenagers. So.
I don't know if you grew up in the 90s and then watched That 70s Show as a teenager. When did That 70s Show come out? Was it like 2007?
Oh, really? I thought it was earlier than that. 1998 to 2006.
Wow, 1998? Jesus Christ. Okay. So maybe some people. A rare breed.
I noticed that they had all of the main cast except for Fez and Danny Masterson show up. I know Fez is going to be in the show later.
Fez comes back. Fez is...
Yeah.
They weirdly enough, I feel like they are decent at writing the original characters. But not so much any of the new ones.
Well, they also didn't get the one woman who died, right? Was it the original sister?
Oh.
I think they recast her. Did they bring back the new sister?
I don't believe so.
Such a minor part of the show. I mean, she was not in it very much. And yeah, there were two different versions of her, so...
Ugh.
Right. Yeah, I can't imagine why they didn't bring back Danny Masterson. I mean, what a integral part.
What a gem.
Yeah.
I will mention, though, because it is a little fun. The series opens with it being July 4th, 1995. And then when that came on, it's like, oh, cool. I'm like 11 days old and in the background as this show is happening. And I probably already look older than any of the new characters they got for this show. I don't have an opinion. Does anyone have an opinion on The Legend of Vox Machina, parentheses, Critical Role, Season 1?
Yeah, so I've been kind of stuck at home the last couple of days.
Yeah.
I'm watching my in-law's dog, and he doesn't really like to be left alone in our apartment because all the people opening and closing doors scare him. So I, you know, one of us is here at all times with the dog. And so I've been trying to just like find something to watch. And I saw that like season two of The Legend of Vox Machina was coming out. And I'd heard good things about the first season last year, but never picked it up. So I decided to watch it, and it is solid. Like it's pretty decent. I enjoyed watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of the people that I was listening to, like sounded really familiar to me. I'm like, oh, they have like a pretty, solid voice cast. I recognize a lot of these names. And then I figured out that like, it says like The Legend of Vox Machina and then like Critical Role underneath it. Critical Role is, I was kind of hoping Ryan was going to be here for this. Critical Role is a very long running web series of a group of professional voice actors that all just know each other socially.
Right.
They play Dungeons and Dragons. And like after a while, like after doing a couple years of it, they're like, oh, this might be a good idea to like stream this.
I'm on the Critical Role fandom wiki right now, 4,189 pages. So yeah, this is a whole ass thing.
Yeah, no, there's a ton of shit. I had seen Critical Role trending on Twitter for years and I never fucking clicked on it. I had no idea what it was, but it's like all these voice actor friends playing Dungeons and Dragons, streaming it and using their voice acting skills to like really portray their character. And it sounded pretty fucking cool. But like this show, The Legend of Vox Machina, is based on like their first campaign that ran for like 3 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, it's your classic Dungeons and Dragons fantasy shit, but I'm like, oh, that's the voice of Ellie. That's the voice of Abby from The Last of Us Part Two. That guy sounds like he's in from One Piece. This guy sounds like he's from like 30 different video games that I've played.
How the fuck do you know what people on One Piece sound like?
Well, because he's also been in a ton of shit. Like all of these voice actors are so prolific and just know each other socially and have been doing this thing. And it became so popular that Amazon's like, let's do a show about this. But then like just kept the same voice actors as their characters that they did in their Dungeons and Dragons campaign. I think that's pretty fucking cool. I'll never watch Critical Role. I'm not going to stream hundreds of hours of people playing Dungeons and Dragons, but like, I don't know. It's fun. And like, you know, the premise is just, it's Dungeons and Dragons. You know, you got elves and gnomes and dragons and wizards and shit. But like, you know, a little more of a comedy angle. I don't know. I enjoyed the first season. It's not fantastic, but it was good enough to get through. I think I'll probably watch season two.
Actually, like four of their main people have starred in One Piece. I stand corrected. If you've
heard
One Piece period, you... Oh, wait. Huh. Laura Bailey played the main girl in Yu Yu Hakusho. She's been at this a while. Damn.
I don't know. All these people are fucking lifers.
I think me and Lucas have pitched two separate shows that sound very similar to this one, and you didn't give them a shot.
What do you mean?
Harmon Quest and Fantasy High. I think both of those shows are
no, but like that's similar in conceit. I will never stream somebody playing Dungeons and Dragons. I can't I can't do that. I don't, well, for one thing, I don't watch people stream anything. It's just,
they're not,
it doesn't
streams.
Hold my attention.
No.
They're shows. They're actual,
you like, produced Javad, baby.
Shows. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, I was under the impression that these were like 4 hour long episodes of just
the second season of Fantasy High, which I flamed out on, is like that. Yeah. But no, the first season of Fantasy High is like highly edited and like put together compositions of, yeah, people playing Dungeons and Dragons, but like with a lot of graphics and, you know, like miniatures, stuff like that. And then Harmon Quest is literally, it sounds like very similar. Like, yeah, the base is people are playing Dungeons and Dragons, but then like there's animators who are animating the stuff that they're doing and talking about at the table that they filmed on like a set.
Okay.
And it's very highly edited and everything like that.
I will say, I did always think that Fantasy High sounded interesting and fun, and I just didn't have the mental bandwidth for it. But also, you missed this part. I didn't know that's what the basis of this show was when I started watching it. It was like a couple episodes in, I'm like, I keep seeing this little thing pop up in the corner that says Critical Role. I'm like, I've seen that trending on Twitter before. I don't know what the hell that is. And I finally looked it up. And I'm like, oh my God, that's why I know all these voices. Because all these people are famous voice actors that just played Dungeons and Dragons and eventually were like, maybe we should stream this.
Not to undercut your previous point, Ryan, but didn't it come out in like the Twitch leaks shortly after, not this most recent summer, but last summer, that Critical Role is actually the most profitable Twitch channel? Something like that? Okay.
Yeah, it was in the, that was a long time ago at this point. I think that was what, like 2 or 3 years ago? But I when the Twitch leaks came out, Critical Role was literally number one. And I think by like a laughable margin.
Right.
Like the number one.
Which is
most profitable Twitch channel.
I'm never going to watch this shit. I mean, I'll watch the second season of The Legend of Vox Machina, but I'm not going to watch Critical Role.
Andrew, that's like how most people consume like campaign, like what do they call it? Like live play content, something like that. I think I'm getting the terminology slightly wrong. But that's how most people do it because, I watched 2 seasons of College Humor Dropouts, Fantasy High. Could not give a shit about any of the other campaigns they're doing. Have not checked them out. I met a guy. I met a guy in most of them. No. Fantasy High Season 3. Let's go. Right there with you. No. Nothing.
I think you coasted on Fantasy High Season 1 vibes into Season 2 because you had established this bond with the characters and everything like that. And we're able to therefore like soldier through Season 2. And meanwhile, all the rest of their productions are the same type of like content as Season 2. And so because you didn't have that pre-existing relationship with like the really high production value version, it didn't click quite as much.
Season 2, I think I also caught up on that at like the perfect time. Because I'd watch a lot of Season 1 early in the pandemic, and then during the part of the pandemic when I moved, it's like, I need something familiar. I need something that's a little bit of an anchor right now as I'm in a slightly tumultuous part of my life. Let's check out Season 2 and go off of the familiarity of that. So, But also Chungle Down Bim, that character, that bit with Lou Wilson in Season 2, is maybe a high watermark for the entire season. Serious.
I've seen some pretty crazy like clips that without context are some of the funniest things I've ever seen. And I'm sure with context are that much better. I think it's the Brennan Lee Mulligan desperately trying to kill a dog and everyone being horrified at the fact that like as the bad guy, he has specifically decided to target their dog. And I think he looks at the camera and goes, I'm going to kill that fucking dog. It's terrifying.
I know this is a good excuse to talk. Have you guys heard about any of the news that Wizards of the Coast Hasbro is kind of fucking with Dungeons and Dragons legalities in a way that might screw over a lot of people like the Critical Role folks?
I know that there has been controversy, but I don't even know what the hell Wizards of the Coast is.
Wizards of the Coast owns the Dungeons and Dragons IP. They're like the
parent company.
The controlling, yes. Yeah.
They also principally do Magic the Gathering, but it's widely believed that a big part of the reason they're making so many changes around Dungeons and Dragons right now is because they fucked Magic the Gathering in a way that's going to make it so that's really unprofitable for them for the foreseeable future. They released too many cards at once. They just flooded the market. They thought, man, people are all going to get into Magic over the pandemic. And then people didn't. And then they're like, oh no, we got crates of Magic cards that nobody wants to buy.
Isn't Magic pretty social?
Yeah.
Gotta be in pretty close contact with a lot of people who might not be in your quote unquote pod. That's an interesting bet for them to make.
I don't.
Oh man, everyone was trying to find new niches during the pandemic. I really thought everyone would get into competitive arm wrestling.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
This card game where you have to sit right next to people and touch things. Oh, that would go great.
Yeah, but a big thing with the big Dungeons & Dragons change is that they are changing around some of the basically fair use stuff, free use stuff around it. That pretty much they said, hey, it is cool in perpetuity if other people use a previous version of this tabletop game to build other distinct tabletop games. I think Pathfinder being the biggest competitor, under the belief of the CEO at the time that, like, hey, we can actually make more money if we're not a monopoly in this space. Like, if we have enough similar competitors, that's just going to get more people into tabletop games, and eventually they'll come back to us. And most recently, they didn't follow through with it, but most recently there was a leaked copy of some legal language that was like, well, actually, y'all owe us money now if you're using D&D, I think 3.0, 3.5 to build different tabletop games.
How the fuck does Dungeons & Dragons even work? I don't have the foggiest idea of how this game actually works. Are there storylines that they already have written out and you just like play through them with dice? I thought the idea was that you like created your own shit.
It is the most complicated storytelling like device ever made. Like, yeah, there are modules that are official, like modules published by Wizards of the Coast and everything like that. But like anyone can write a module that like has a story and everything put in there. Like, that's chill. It's the like the gameplay, it's the nitty gritty, the mechanics of making it work are so unfathomably complex to like those of us who don't have much experience with tabletop role-playing games. Like, it is books that are like that thick. That's the shit that you need to read before you can even like start playing, basically.
God damn.
It's not like a open up the board game, pull out a little pamphlet, read through the rules, and then like learn as you go. It's like,
it is
intense shit. And most of it only has to be known by the dungeon master. Like, if you have a good dungeon master who knows how to like handle newcomers and stuff, then it's feasible. But yeah.
So a lot of dungeon masters will come up with their own campaigns. There are like prepackaged campaigns. But a lot of them will come up with their own campaigns, their own storylines. But what Dungeons & Dragons created and said a version of was okay for other people to use and build off of was the more like mechanical elements of the game. So, and right, I think you'll be familiar with this one from Fantasy High. Like, there is a spell, Tasha's Hideous Laughter, in Dungeons & Dragons, just Hideous Laughter in Pathfinder, to be legally distinct, I guess, that like, you pick up the Dungeons & Dragons guidebook and that tells you, okay, here is when a player can use that spell, here is what it affects, here is how this interacts with every other element of the world. And then that is a lot of the stuff that is prepackaged in Dungeons and Dragons that previously it was cool for other people to build upon, attacks, enemies, weapons, that kind of thing. And that they were thinking about changing, thinking about charging people for, and maybe still will if like the heat dies down or they can find a more amicable way to do that.
Like for us, for our purposes, if we were just chilling on a Zoom and not recording it or anything, and Lucas decided, I'm going to be a dungeon master and we're going to play Dungeons and Dragons, yeah, we wouldn't have to pay anything. But it's like, it's similar to like how Nintendo tried to like get content creators to pay to like record Nintendo games. So, you know, like, but in a way where it's like some of this stuff is really heavily based on. Yeah. And but a lot of people do use Pathfinder and then people will call it Dungeons and Dragons. Like Harmon Quest, the thing I mentioned, would use Pathfinder, but they would talk about Dungeons and Dragons and like they wouldn't care because, yeah, like it's just free publicity for Dungeons and Dragons, like, and getting people to be like, what is this? And then buying manuals and buying things that like relate to it to learn and everything like that.
So. Every time I hear about like the cool parts of these tabletop games, I think like, oh man, like this actually sounds like a lot of fun, like using your imagination and like going through all these scenarios with your friends. That sounds cool. And then I hear about like the shit that is required of you in order to like go through this. And it's like it's just like the bar for entry is so high.
Dude, you, yeah.
It like, is and it isn't. It depends on who you have introducing you. Like, literal true dungeon masters would have no problem with you as a beginner coming in with like a base knowledge of like, here's what you do on your turn. Here's what an attack of opportunity, you know, like just basic like things that you could learn in a half hour or an hour. A true dungeon master would have no problem integrating you into the game, kind of helping you, like holding your hand in certain parts where you might be unfamiliar. Other players at your table, like they're in your party, they want you to succeed, like they're going to be able to give you little tidbits here and there when you need them. Like you can absolutely do it, but yeah, if you were to start from scratch and try to be a dungeon master or something, yeah, the amount that you're going to have to learn is pretty, it feels somewhat insurmountable. And that's some of my favorite stuff from Fantasy High, like, or at least like some of my stuff that I think is underrated and goes overlooked is what's his name? The ball, that actor's name.
He's married to that.
Yeah, he's married to her.
Oh God, yeah.
Emily Ashford, is that her name?
Yes.
He's married to her. Murph, yeah. Murph is also a dungeon master. So Brennan and Murph sometimes get into these little like rules sparring sessions, which are hilarious as a bystander who has no idea what's happening, watching these two uber nerds.
Well, like, no, like, Ellen, I did invite you.
Right. Getting like really in depth in like a hilarious way, because like when you're watching, Brennan Lee Mulligan, who's the Dungeon Master, is so charismatic and creative and unbelievable that you're like, okay, so you kind of assume that like when you're a Dungeon Master, you probably just like, if you're not a super nerd who basically has no friends and doesn't hang out, you don't really know the rules and you're just kind of like smoothing over the edges with your own like charisma and creativity. But then like when Murph like kind of needles him on a point and he's like, wait, and then they start like going back and forth and they prove that no, they both really do know the rules like to a T, to a disturbing degree, without needing to reference anything. They're just like, oh yeah, wait, but no, doesn't that then apply? And like just really getting into it. And it's like, holy shit, these guys are freaks. Like how did they get this deep?
I forget the exact circumstances of it, but there's a moment in Fantasy High where Murph tries to do something. And then I use a tonic of paralysis on this enemy. And then Brennan says something to the effect of, the species is unaffected by paralysis. And Murph's just, you sure about that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he did it. He did an Obama, please proceed, governor. Like, just straight up, you walked right into my trap, motherfucker. And then usually Dungeon Master, if they get bested on the rules, will give like an inspiration point or something, like just a little like brief advantage to the player for like beating them at their own game, basically.
Oh, you got
so, me. Yeah. Someone who's a good sport, not a piece of shit, which there are plenty of pieces of shit who, yeah, would react very poorly to being proven wrong.
Dungeon Masters, that role definitely attracts a specific breed of rules lawyers. Yeah.
We may have known one or two of them in college.
Guys, we're going to talk about The Last of Us in a second. But The Last of Us, a TV show based on a game trying to emulate prestige TV, did it. It inspired me to play a video game for the first time.
Damn.
Never
done
it.
Before The Last of Us, it was just jumping on Goombas and hitting bricks, man.
Yep.
The Last of Us really, really advanced the genre.
And then, yeah, now that I'm checking out video games, I did a cursory Google search and discovered that Yoko Taro's Drakengard is the place you want to start if you want to get into video games.
That's entry level.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that.
It is the base.
Yeah. Think about, if you only played coin-op arcade games like Pac-Man and shit,
yeah,
step one is definitely anything from Yoko Taro.
This is what you do, you know? Hey, kids out there, you know, you're seeing Subway Surfer on TikTok, so you're thinking you should check that out? Nah, Yoko Taro's Drakengard for the PlayStation 2.
Are you a 62-year-old grandmother of 8 who's played Candy Crush for the last 10 years? I think Drakengard, probably a good entry point to some of those more intense video games.
Oh, yeah. For better or worse, this feels like a video game made by a gamer. This feels like a guy who, yeah, I really appreciate all these elements of different video games, like some of these genre tropes. I'm going to do my own spin on them. I'm gonna do it all but dark. And the best example I can think of is that the protagonist of this game is a silent protagonist, but it happens diegetically. Like, there is a plot point explaining why the dude doesn't talk. And that's...
Portal did it.
You know what? Okay.
Yeah. Portal did it 15 years ago.
Wait, when did Portal come out?
Portal came out, what, 2007? This is an old-ass game.
Ooh, hold on. 2003 for Drakengard.
Wow.
Wow.
There you go. Drakengard did it first, baby.
Yeah, but then the gameplay is just a mashup of Dynasty Warriors, Final Fantasy, Panzer Dragoon, other rail shooters in a way that is, maybe they're trying to do too much. Maybe it's really interesting that all of this stuff is happening over the course of like a half hour period with the game, but maybe none of them are all fully baked. The weapon combos feel atrocious, but to get better combos you have to use the weapon more, so it's just a slog. It's also super fucking edgy. It's one of the edgiest video games I have ever played.
I mean, really, like, actually edgy, or like The Matrix edgy,
like
incels is what you're saying,
a little bit. And maybe in like a self-aware way, but it's a little too early for me to tell yet. I can give Yoko Taro the benefit of the doubt, but oof, boy, this teenager loves killing a little too much, maybe. I don't know. I'm going to be bouncing between this and another thing I'll talk about in a little bit. For a while, I think. But then the other thing I want to shout out is that, this game has a pedophile who feels super bad about being a pedophile in it, and you can play as him.
Is he a pedophile or a child molester? I want to clarify this real quick.
He is a pedophile. Well, okay. So here's the thing.
Is this a big difference? Going to throw that out there.
He has a sexual attraction to children.
Yes.
And has become a hermit in the woods because he feels super ashamed about this and his potential incapacity to inflict terrible harm upon children.
Yeah. So not a child molester.
Yeah, not a child molester.
That's a lot of people, Electra. I'm going to throw that out there. Yeah. Like, that's a sizable chunk of the population who has a mental illness and, you know, didn't ask for it or anything like that and is doing everything in their power to work on that and not commit heinous crimes.
Like, modern day werewolves.
Kind of, though.
That being said,
it's not that insane.
No.
If it was a child molester who's like, ooh, I feel really bad about all the bad things I did, and they try to, like, Jaime Lannister him and, like, redeem him in your eyes as the playable character, that'd be another level. That would be a different
How many children have you molested? 100? 200? How many children have you stopped from being molested? 500,000. The population of King's Landing. Oh my god, I can't believe I fucking said that.
That's horrifying.
That can't be the episode title.
No, how many children have you stopped from being molested? It has to be a direct one-to-one.
That being said, there's also a character in this game who, through fantasy shenanigans, they are a 10-year-old. They look like a 10-year-old, but they've been a 10-year-old for like 40 years.
Oh.
And I am not looking forward to these two characters interacting.
I think we know where this is going. Is Yoko Taro okay, Lucas? Like, you've talked about him before. You seem like you like him. Feels like this reads like a confession letter. Like, I don't like all the things that you've combined here in this description.
We're talking about a guy who has made it his entire professional life without anyone knowing what he looks like. Maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe he'll show up on a couple of CCTV feeds. Yeah.
So I think this podcast is the first time I heard these accusations lofted. We had a bit a while ago about how, yeah, Yoko Taro has taken off his mask. Or did he just pay a guy to put on his mask and then take it off?
Yeah, dude, I'm serious. Like, maybe he takes off that mask and it is the Zodiac Killer. Yeah.
If I can give any creator the benefit of the doubt, it's Yoko Taro. So I'm going to see this game through and then reserve judgment until then. Although I will say, yeah, he's put out a lot of mobile games lately with some less than great monetization schemes, and maybe that's Square Enix forcing him to do it, but hey, man, maybe just put out an actual video game and remind everyone that, you're not just a brand anymore. I would appreciate that.
Please, bro. Please. Put out a real game, bro. You're so good at making games. Please, bro.
Although Nier Automata got an anime this quarter, which is really weird that that's happening simultaneously with The Last of Us. But apparently it's going to be delayed after episode 4 because of supposed COVID complications. And I know there was an outbreak of that in East Asia that maybe would affect the in-betweeners, the more cheaper underpaid labor that goes into an animated product, but I don't think COVID can be an excuse anymore for stuff like this. Especially for something like animation, where there are other people out there. There are more animators than what there are projects potentially. You just got to be willing to pay people and budget your time accordingly. Is my harsh opinion on this. But yeah. I gotta take a minute. I gotta clear my throat before I talk about Fire Emblem Engage. Y'all got anything else? Y'all got anything that didn't make the dock?
I'm currently in my FIFA break as I attempt to get Team of the Year cards.
That's
which
right.
Ryan's in his no FIFA era.
Yeah. You get overpowered end game cards halfway through the game's life cycle. They are endlessly valuable.
I think referring it to it as a break is inappropriate. Ryan, I think this is bulking season for you.
Yeah, this is a strategic retreat. This is I literally lost 10 games in a row. And I could tell that the AI, like Andrew was listening as I was finishing one of them. I could tell the AI was trying to like help me. Like it was like, no, like, oh, he made a shitty pass. Let's let that bounce right to his guy for a wide open goal. And then I'd miss it on purpose. Like it was really doing its best. And then I quit because I was like, oh man, in the game's mind. Oh wow. I'm really upset at this game right now. And now I'm going to take a week off and come back and just open 187 packs and try to get one card.
We should record the podcast while Ryan is opening the packs.
Oh, my dude. God.
I will be recording my live reaction if I end up somehow getting one. You will be receiving it because...
Flip yeah, that!
It's kind of wild. It is kind of wild. But I think... I don't know. I think it might work. We're going to see. It's going to be either Friday or Saturday that I do a mass opening, depending on all the cards that are going to be in packs, basically.
Fantastic. I have some early impressions on Fire Emblem Engage. I just finished the prologue minutes before starting this podcast. The conversation around this game was very much... Hey, the tactics, the gameplay, the strategy, a lot better than Three Houses. The character writing is a lot worse than Three Houses. However, I didn't like the character writing in Three Houses all that much.
Mm.
And I think I'm into Fire Emblem Engage about an hour in. It is.
Oh, you think it's better? You think the character writing is better than Three Houses?
This character writing isn't... This character writing is at least being honest with me. This character writing is...
They're pedophiles. It... They know it.
No, Andrew, the 1,000-year-old dragon is a MILF again, thankfully. So, no pedophiles
Which
so far.
Is always allowed.
Yeah.
Anytime someone tries to excuse that bullshit, it's like, no, these are writers. They have a literal blank slate. That 1,000-year-old dragon can be the hottest 30-year-old woman who has ever lived. That is allowed. They do not have to look like children at all, ever.
This is not a mythology reason that they've chosen that are they're not restrained by the rules of their writing. Like they can create anything they want.
And she is the hottest 30-year-old in existence, and you play as her also 1,000-year-old dragon child, which means you are in your mid-20s or look like it.
Wait, so you look like you're in your mid-20s, and how old does your mother look like?
Mid-30s.
How? When does she have you?
They don't age.
These timelines, they don't age. Then why does she look like she's in her mid-30s? And why do you look like you're in your mid-20s? Sounds like they age a little bit. This timeline is so confusing.
Up to a point where the writers are comfortable. And
they got to do it like in Time, the Justin Timberlake movie, where everyone looks like they're in their mid-20s, including people's parents, which looks weird, but logically.
Yeah, those are the rules.
Yeah.
That's actually the plot of my favorite Fire Emblem game, Shadows of Valencia, where... Yeah, there are these two dragons who are basically immortal, and because they are literal gods, everyone's letting them call the shots between these nations. And then they start to die, which doesn't really happen for them, but they're just that old at this point. And then they start making wild, terrible decisions, and everyone's kind of like, yeah, we gotta stop them now. Fantastic, but no, 30-year-old dragon mom in this game, who dies in the prologue, and then this is the type of game where she dies in your arms, and then a jump cuts to a scene where your character says, "Hey guys, thanks for helping me with the funeral." Like
the grief part isn't shown.
No, this game is entirely just action set pieces in a way that feels like, oh wait, this is a Tonkatsu series, this is Power Rangers. All of these characters are archetypes meant to sell action figures, And it's being super upfront about that in a way that Three Houses never was. Three Houses was trying to present a level of depth in character writing that just wasn't there. And this game just being more open to being honest about that very 80s cartoon energy makes it a lot more entertaining and a lot more enjoyable for me. Also, yeah, this is a difficult game. I am playing on hard and classic difficulty because in spite of the bit I said earlier, I am a fucking gamer and I am a freak for these kinds of tactics games. And yeah, no, it's a challenge. I've had to restart once or twice because one of my characters died because I overextended. And I'm really enjoying this one. This is the first new game I've played this year. And boy, it might stay at my number one game of the year spot for the year. I don't know yet.
I thought you were saying this is it. You got it. This is your one.
Maybe. We'll see.
God damn.
What does this group think of The Last of Us? The first episode of The Last of Us.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of it. It's very good, and everyone seems to think so.
I mean, okay. You know what? I can be...
You said it was really good. You said you liked it.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Definitely. I don't... People are starting to get a little circle jerky with this one. Like, I'm seeing some coverage out there on people saying that The Last of Us breaks the curse of video game adaptations. And it's like, that hasn't been true for the last 5 years. I didn't care for the Sonic movie, but, like, people... Very much.
Nobody.
Are you unironically comparing the Sonic movie to The Last of Us?
I'm saying that was successful. I'm saying that.
I don't think that they're talking about success. I think they're talking about critical acclaim. Yeah, and like it being
quality,
genuinely really good. I think that's what they're mentioning. This is a video game adaptation that is going to go on to great critical acclaim and like success in terms of quality. Yeah, not like. Overall financial regard. I don't know.
Also, like,
I have to see the article.
Like, right. adapting the story of the video game properly and it's still like translating well onto screen. Like, Sonic the Hedgehog, whether you liked it or not, is not a story that takes place within the video games of Sonic the Hedgehog. It's just what? They took the character of Sonic and said, people like this blue guy that runs fast. Let's put him in a movie.
James Marsden wasn't in the Sonic games? Damn.
Let's put him in a movie and have him reinforce conservative values. Gotta love that. Sonic the Hedgehog, a character that is canonically a terrorist.
Let's end Jim Carrey's career.
Jim Carrey was decent in that movie.
Jim Carrey ended his own career before the Sonic movie came out.
Oh, boy.
Jim Carrey was real weird with it for a while there.
I don't know. I don't know if I've fully explored this thought yet, but one thing I want to levy is that you guys think that anything is lost that is inherent to The Last of Us as a media property, by adapting it into a prestige TV show because the visual identity of the game and I think what made a lot of people appreciate it so heavily originally upon its release was that this game is constructed like a prestige TV show. Like that is what we are going for. We are creating prestige TV show, the game, and now it is prestige TV show based on a game that's trying to be a prestige TV show.
But I don't know that like that criticism's all the way fair. Like I feel like The Last of Us kind of came out before the era that we know of as like prestige TV era, like where everyone's trying to be like the Game of Thrones. I know Game of Thrones came out before The Last of Us, but I don't think that culture was as prevalent as it is now. I think that they were trying to make a good story.
Yeah.
And as a result, it lended itself better because they even talk about how it was originally supposed to be a movie. And like Neil Druckmann, when they wanted to make a live action adaptation, was doing it as a movie. So I feel like if they were truly just emulating a prestige TV show, they would have immediately known to do a TV series instead of trying to ham-fist it into a movie. I think that they just wanted to tell a good story.
Yeah, I think that is kind of the long and short of it, is that The Last of Us is a good story that resonated with a lot of people, that's heavy hitting. I still think the gameplay of The Last of Us is well done. It's not going to win any originality awards, but like, I think it was executed pretty well. The world building was really good. But I've seen that argument a lot when it comes to The Last of Us, where people are critical of it in the way that they're like, oh, they're just Oscar bait chasing, but like for video games. And like, oh, they wanted to make a good story. Don't they know that's not what make video games what they are? Don't they know video games are supposed to suck ass? And it's like, I don't know what you're trying to say here, but I've seen it a lot where they're like, The Last of Us being a good story is like a bad thing for video games because it like takes away from other video games. But it's like, The Last of Us isn't the first video game with a well-told story. It's just, I don't know, like a very, like, I don't want to say grounded because it's a game with fucking zombies in it.
It's not like, even it's the first PlayStation exclusive. Like, I remember Heavy Rain. I remember everyone going crazy about how Heavy Rain is like this crazy story that could be like its own. It doesn't have to be a video game.
And then you miss a quick time event where the character is chasing down the man he thinks killed his son in a grocery store. And then he just slips on a bunch of oranges and it's hilarious. And it is the greatest video game for a moment.
Yeah. But like any video game can have a really good story. It doesn't matter if the gameplay is like a gritty third person shooter where you play as a white dude, or if it is just a JRPG where you play as a fairy, or, you know, anything in between. Like, you can still fucking write a story well and put it into a video game. There's no laws against that.
It's so like this, everything. It's the circle jerk, counter circle jerk. Like, that's the only reason you would get an unhinged argument like that of like, no, it's actually bad that the story is quote unquote good. Right. Like, that makes the game worse, is literally just because people praise The First Last of Us for its story while not necessarily mentioning the fact that it has just mediocre mechanics and like other things like that, because the story blew them away so much. So then people don't like that because they don't give a shit about the story. They just want to go pew pew. And like, that's not why they come to games. So then their argument is like, no, that actually is a bad thing.
And yeah,
it's just because they're reactionary to the like original circle jerk around the game.
Like, it's just, I've seen a lot of people say that like The Last of Us is less of a video game than other games out there. That it's a fraction of a video game because the mechanics are not complicated and the story's really good. And I think we need to be careful about like drawing a distinction about like what makes something worthy of being part of the medium. And it's just like, yeah, regardless of how you feel about the game as a whole, this is a very good story that translates well to television. But there are other things that had stories that would maybe translate well to television that didn't do a very good job of that. And this series, at least after one episode, has done a good job of that. And I think that's pretty cool.
Sorry. I think that's totally fair. I can't help but balk and have the reaction of, okay, guys, let's settle down a little bit whenever I see the phrase or the headline. The Last of Us is the greatest story ever told in gaming, brought to TV now. And I'm trying to resist becoming a part of that anti-circle jerk.
Right.
But it's also like, God, come on. Relax a little bit.
If they said The Last of Us is one of the best stories ever told in video games coming to television, you would have no gripes. So your only problem is the hyperbole. It's not anything to do with The Last of Us.
But then the people writing that,
being hyperbolic.
But then the people writing that ad copy wouldn't be doing their jobs, and it's not their fault, I guess, that people believe that unquestionably. Some people, at least.
Yeah. I mean, look, if it is not like out of place being mentioned there, then yeah, that's what's going to happen. Like, if it's not laughably out of place, like if they're just like, I don't know, fucking trying to think of a random bad story, and honestly, it doesn't really. Like, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, the TV show, the best story ever told in video games, coming to TV. Yeah, then it's bullshit. But like, if it is considered in that echelon of like some of the best storytelling in video games, then yeah, that's just what's going to be marketed regardless.
We are going to get, over the next couple of years, a bunch of examples of this on like different scales of, in terms of like different popularity of the video game and like different studios making the show. And we're going to be able to compare them, which I think is cool. But we're also entering this weird stage where Sony is turning all of their video games into like as much of a multi-platform IP as possible. Like the Horizon Zero Dawn television show that's coming to Netflix, the God of War television show that's coming to Amazon Prime, the Ghosts of Tsushima movie that's coming out. I forget who's producing that. I don't think it's Sony. I think they just licensed it out, but I'm not positive. We're going to see how this works. And I think it is kind of just saying like, oh, here's a story that is not bad to really good. People like it, so we'll make more of it. And, you know, there will probably be varying degrees of success. And maybe The Last of Us will still be the best out of all those bunch because it has probably the strongest source material.
So here's where I disagree with you. And I had you listen to the podcast, Andrew. I don't know if you listen to the podcast, Lucas, but like the difference that The Last of Us has is Craig Mazin. None of those other shows are going to like, if Neil Druckmann pitched the series to HBO and was the showrunner, we would not be having this conversation right now. Like, this is not the discussion we would be having. You listen to that fucking podcast and you tell me that it's not just Craig Mazin, big fan of The Last of Us, making a TV show based on the video game. Like, Neil Druckmann wrote the game. That is his influence on the like, they even talk about the opening scene and like what they were going to do, what Neil Druckmann's vision was.
Craig Mazin was like, that's not good though. What if we did this thing that's better? And Neil Druckmann's like, I don't like that. That's not what I was going for. And he's like, but it is better.
Neil Druckmann's like, what if we just did the exact same thing we did for the game and did a weird BBC documentary thing about zombie ants and then just launched into it? And Craig Mazin's like, what if we did this really emotionally affecting, aha, like, holy shit, we're about to go crazy speech in the beginning on like a weird Dick Cavett parody? Like, who the fuck comes up with that? That's straight up like Jordan Peele, Nope. The chimpanzee, the like, all right, this is the essence of what you're about to watch boiled down into a horrifying reality. And it didn't even click for me where the guy was going when he said like, oh, you know, like, you're right. Fungus have never really had a reason to seek out hosts with an internal body temperature of 94 degrees. Like, that's never happened before. Now, let's just say hypothetically, the global climate was to raise 1 or 2 degrees Celsius. Wouldn't that be weird? And it was like, oh shit, no wait, that's fucking lit. Like, I loved that. That was such a like ding, let's go. Like, I love this shit.
I would love to find out eventually whose decision it was to distance the show from the 2008 financial crisis that definitely impacted the game, is definitely touched upon in the original game, because I still find that to be an incredibly odd decision. That
I read an article with Craig Mazin and he framed it basically as like they wanted a different time frame for the technology available to the people in the post-apocalypse, and that like he just basically wanted to avoid the smartphone question because he knew it would come up like over and over and over.
Like, oh, like, why don't these people have cell phones? Like, why couldn't they just communicate faster? Like, that kind of thing. Okay.
Essentially.
Okay.
And like, I thought that too. And like, honestly, it's not completely solved because dumb phones existed in 2003.
That's true.
And like cell towers, like, I was like, ah, they're like manufacturing bullets and painkillers in factories. Like, they couldn't get a couple cell towers up and running to like service a local area, you know, like, we know where the cell towers are in LA. If there was an LA quarantine zone, you just send a couple of like people on a mission to like maintain those cell towers and like rotate them out, and you would have cell service for the area, you know, like if you have electricity and all this stuff. But yeah, like I think that that was the way that it was framed, basically, is like, oh, we wanted to kind of reframe. And if nothing else, it was literally just to, like you guys said, it's a kind of irrelevant because culture didn't really happen in the meantime in those 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I think that they just kind of wanted to avoid that criticism, mm-hmm. even if it didn't hold any merit at all, just kind of get people's minds off of that. So,
all right. Okay, cool. So our path forward is clear. We have to get Craig Mazin to play the Metal Gear Solid games.
Honestly, yeah. If you want a good adaptation of your video game, get Craig Mazin to play it and hope he loves it.
There is a Metal Gear Solid TV show in production right now. They're doing that one too.
Just like there has been since like 2008. Not coming out. It shouldn't come out.
Sounds like the Last of Us movie was in production since shortly after the game came out and was received successfully. And it was in hell for years. It sounded like they were wrapping production on Last of Us 2 when he finally had the meeting with Craig Mazin, or maybe they were in the early stages of production. I don't remember. But they were doing Last of Us Part 2 when he finally met with Craig Mazin, and it was post Chernobyl. So it was after 2019. That they started this.
Yeah, no, this has Oscar Isaac in it. It's definitely happening.
Oscar Isaac is attached. Until they have Oscar Isaac on film saying a line, yeah, Oscar Isaac's not in the show. He is attached, and that's what they say in the industry.
Also, I'm hearing rumors that there are plans to remake the original Metal Gear Solid. I don't mean to be old man yells at cloud on this one, but maybe that's a bad idea. I think a lot of what makes that game work is that so much of the levels, the gameplay is designed around the physical limitations of a PlayStation 1 as a piece of hardware. And I mean, we found this in the Twin Stakes, in the GameCube remake of those games, that when you add the affordances of modern hardware, like being able to do all the shooting in first person, the games become a fundamentally different and worse experience. So it's going to have to be a pretty big reimagining. There's going to have to be a lot of design changes. And then maybe at that point, maybe just make a different game. Maybe just make a different espionage thriller touching upon some touchy political subjects. But yeah, whatever. I don't know. Do what you... How do you even do the Mantis? On the phone. How do you even do the Psycho Mantis fight if you can't to plug your controller into a different thing? How are you gonna change that?
I don't know. I'm waiting definitely for The Last of Us. There's got to be like one, because they already did the reference that I talked about with Andrew, where Ellie stands up the second they get outside and starts being super like, I'm outside, like doing the Ellie thing where she is not incognito whatsoever, and meanwhile you're forced to be entirely incognito, and you will be punished for even the slightest misstep. I'm waiting for them to do a like kind of death fake out where one of them gets brutally murdered like in the game as a death cutscene, because yeah, like that's my main experience with The Last of Us, is getting a horrific cutscene over and over and over until I finally beat an area.
I can't wait for Joel to use too many bullets in an encounter and say, well, I better start this over and just run into the crowd.
Yeah. I was surprised because I got very sick of The Last of Us 2 for like the last part of it. I was surprised how many encounters you could sprint through if you're on normal difficulty. On 2, I don't know. I don't remember. I didn't do it on 1, but on 2, definitely, I think I fell off maybe about halfway through Abby's storyline, and when it was just like, oh, and here's the next section of like enemies, and usually, you know, like human, but not always, enemies that you're gonna have to do combat with, and I just be like, if I just sprint, I think that's the exit over there. What are my odds? Odds are pretty high, turns out.
And then the odds that this podcast, fuck me, wow, will be ending soon are also pretty high. Thank you all so much for listening to episode 212 of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast, which will almost certainly be titled, You Should Be Ashamed of It. If you like what you heard, like, comment, subscribe, etc. Check us out on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok for highlight clips. Support us through Anchor or Patreon, where you can join the likes of the terrific Tiffany Cole, Sucky Badger, and sensual Richard Nixon. Follow us on Twitter for updates at @V2_podcast. Follow me on Twitter at @LucasTheWriter to keep up with all of my writing and other projects. I'm also on Mastodon, but that's weird. I was on like a 2-hour long live stream where I talked about the latest Gundam series on Friday night. Go check out that VOD on the Fandom Twitch channel. And then on Tuesday, I and a couple of my anime fan peers at Fandom will be doing a live ranking of the best anime to release in 2022. Take that, Crunchyroll Awards. That will be Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So keep an eye out for that as well. Thank you all so much for listening, and have a great week.